Howdy, and welcome to Thin Air, news with an altitude from your small-town, high-country public radio stations. I'm John Kovash.
I'm Gina Garacio. Howdy. This month, we bring you a special about the pitched battle over the future of the Colorado Division of Wildlife.
Everybody's watching the White River because it's kind of considered a test case. Colorado is undergoing such radical change right now.
Unfortunately, the greed and the money is taking over,
and we're fighting over the last pieces of the wild pie.
But first, some updates from around the Western Slope and Four Corners. In many Western towns, higher density infill is one housing solution, but infill frequently gets opposition from neighbors. The city of Santa Fe has adopted a new general plan that calls for 60% of the city to be developed as very low density. Housing advocates say that's bad news for Santa Fe's families, half of which get by on an annual income of $35,000 or less.
Park City is expecting a record construction year as developers scramble to build new projects in anticipation of the 2002 Olympics. Although Olympic medals will be awarded in Salt Lake City, Park City is looking at ways to get maximum mileage out of the event. So far, suggestions have included closing Main Street and trucking in Jumbotrons so visitors can watch the action.
The INS, the Federal Immigration Service, is opening up 5 new offices on the Western Slope and is starting to see resistance from Latino groups. Last month, plans for a new holding facility in Carbondale were the target of protesters and petitioners.
But the major concern is that as the INS comes into this community, they are going to be focusing primarily on Latinos. And this particular place where they have chosen to put their detention center is right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And one of the big concerns is that there are going to be truckloads of Latinos and probably Latino men in handcuffs being back and forth between trucks in this building right in the middle of a residential neighborhood. And obviously that creates a very serious role model problem for the Latino kids living in that neighborhood, but it also gives a false impression most of the Latinos in the valley are illegal, which isn't true.
Dave Throgmorton works at Compass, which carries out community organizing in the Roaring Fork Valley. Compass is charging that the INS only targets employees, not employers. Throgmorton says increased enforcement will bring increased misery to the valley.
They pick these folks up, they take them down to the detention center, they send them to Grand Junction, they send them to Denver, and then they're gone. Many times they leave families in their wake. So part of the other thing that we're doing is organizing with some of the local church groups to make sure that we've got we're well stocked with things like diapers and all of the kinds of things that a family needs to, you know, for emergency preparations should their breadwinner be whisked away without notice. It's going to create a whole series of family problems.
In the Aspen Valley, many organizers feel what they are really dealing with are the unwelcome results of a flawed NAFTA trade agreement.
Where capital is moving from north to south and creating a lot of very low-paying jobs where people can't afford to make a living in their own community, they're forced to come up here where they can make more money because we've destroyed their local economy. And so we also want to make sure that the debate with the INS is not just a debate over whether or not they are sweeping up only Latinos and they're leaving the Australian students over at the ski places alone. The other part of the issue is that this is related to U.S. foreign trade policies, and they are inherently unjust, and they're creating this.
Felicia Trevor works for the Stepstone Center, the organizing arm of Stepstone. She says Valley Latinos fear they will come under increasing harassment.
Because, as you know, living in a ski resort town, there are many immigrants from all over the world, and they're not usually legal or documented. But I think that the Latino population here feels they will be singled out.
Last year, another advocacy group was formed in the Carbondale area, Latinos Unidos. Trevor says to some, Latinos are a scapegoat for impacts brought about by growth.
Really, you know, they're here to make a living. Many come just temporarily out of dire necessity, and then as they stay and they're here longer, it becomes more and more apparent that it's not so feasible to go back to Mexico, and you know, then they just want to live peacefully and live in harmony. I mean, the Latino culture is very mild-mannered, family-oriented culture.
Meanwhile, Latinos in Alamosa are expressing greater concern about the new INS presence, and a new Latino center is being organized in Durango. And Dave Throgmorton plans to bring speakers from the Seattle trade battle to Carbondale.
They were taken by surprise. I mean, I don't think that the INS understood at all that there was going to be opposition. I think that they figured they'd just sashay into these communities and everybody would welcome them with open arms. And I think everybody got a wake-up call when they saw the march here in Carbondale. And it was pretty remarkable. I mean, it started out with 100 people or so, and by the time the march finished up at City Hall, there were 228 folks there. And that's pretty remarkable in a city this size to get that many people to publicly commit themselves to a cause like this. I hope a lot of the other communities that are getting these instant response teams in them will at least raise an eyebrow and let them know that if they come into the community, it's not with everybody's blessing and that they're going to be scrutinized pretty closely.
You're listening to Thin Air.
When it comes to buying private land for open space, Boulder is still indisputably on the cutting edge. Last year, Boulder spent more than $18 million to protect more than 2,000 acres of land. Since 1967, when the open space tax was begun, $137 million have been spent to purchase 30,000 acres. And since 1993, Boulder County's open space tax has raised the funds to purchase another 40,000 acres. Last year, the most significant acquisition was 1,500 acres at the mouth of the Coal Creek Canyon.
An Aspen ski instructor plans to sue after being fired for refusing to cut his hair. Jaromir Jahulik taught skiing for the last three seasons at Aspen and for 7 years at Blackcomb Whistler. Jahulik is charging gender discrimination.
And all of a sudden, you know, I'm finding myself being discriminated, you know, basically because there is a policy which basically states male has to do this and female doesn't have to do this, which I disbelieve it's constitutional, and that was the whole issue what I actually brought up, because I don't think my hair is that important to me that much, but the importance lies somewhere else.
Lahulik says none of his ski students ever complained about his long hair.
So what I'm basically stating is it's year 2000, and despite that fact, I disbelieve anyone in this situation or this age, you know, is being concerned about long hair, short hair. You know, the point is, or where the concern should be, what is inside of your head instead of what is on your head.
He says he now works in a ski shop and as a carving consultant. He vows never again to work for a big corporation.
This is a baby black bear. A baby black bear weighs only 8 ounces at birth, a far cry from the nearly 400 pounds they can grow to be. Colorado has abundant black bear habitat and consequently lots of bears. Whatever you do, don't ever feed a bear. Don't leave food in your tent or...
For many years, the Colorado Division of Wildlife has been at odds with a conservative state legislature, but morale went up in 1996 when John Muma took over. Muma had been forced out as Regional Forest Service Chief in Missoula by a conservative Congress after he tried to reduce timber cuts. To environmentalists, Muma brought credibility and hope to the DOW. Muma declared the state would take the lead on saving endangered species. He allowed his field biologists to comment directly on environmental impacts, but now Muma is resigning after his latest showdown with Governor Bill Owens and his cabinet over the White River National Forest Plan.
Now, Colorado Greens say the wildlife agency is about to be crippled permanently as hundreds of its best biologists are resigning or retiring, amid charges that a source of credible science has been turned into a political pawn. In the center of the battle is Greg Walcher, Governor Owens' controversial appointee to the head of the Division of Natural Resources. Walcher was director of Club 20, the Western Slope business lobby. In that post, he was often aligned against Enviros, who he accused of wanting to shut down tourism. Walcher was long the point man for Club 20 positions. He opposed increases in grazing fees. He opposed water rights for federal lands. He supported ski expansions and taking laws. In 1996, he called for immediate construction of the Animas La Plata Dam and demanded that the Sierra Club be kicked out of discussions. Club 20 also argued that the Western Slopes aspen forests must be clear-cut to save them and lobbied for increased predator control.
Last year, the legislature granted Walcher tighter control over the DOW. Since then, he has issued a controversial gag order to wildlife biologists and excised much of John Muma's support for preserving remaining wildlife corridors across I-70.
Mr. Walcher was essentially taking the professional scientific perspective from the Division of Wildlife Biologists and putting a politicized spin on it and then gagging the most important part. So, you know, I think it's a real disservice to the taxpaying public who, you know, these Division of Wildlife Biologists are our employees and we've hired them to give us their professional opinions, and this political appointee with no biological background whatsoever is stepping in and really excluding good information from the public discourse.
Sloan Shoemaker works for the Aspen Wilderness Workshop, one of many Colorado green groups that are responding to Greg Walcher's handling of comment on the White River plan.
The San Juan is next, and they're going to deal with the same issues that we're dealing with. And if the White River, I mean, the White River is considered, everybody's watching the White River because it's kind of considered a test case and it's precedent setting that, you know, the Forest Service is trying to take a responsible position in managing recreation and sort of the proliferation of people all across the land. And so that's why this intense energy has been focused by the use it up crowd that they recognize that if the White River falls, then, you know, the dominoes are going to keep falling. And
like many within the Division of Wildlife, Shoemaker sees the Owens administration standing squarely against the legacy of John Muma, who is allowing his field agents to take aggressive stands on conservation. He thinks Muma's decision to step down is a, quote, no-brainer.
My exposure to other DOW personnel, they're pretty frustrated, you know, and they didn't get in this game to be censored like that. So, you know, I can only deduce that the same level of frustration is all the way up to the top.
One witness recently in a Western Slope Division of Wildlife office claims he saw a dartboard with Greg Walcher's picture on it. The heart of the opposition is the old-timers, the seasoned field biologists who joined the division in the idealistic 60s and are now boomers nearing retirement. Rick Sherman is a Montrose native and CSU grad who spent 29 years in the division. A habitat and fisheries biologist, Sherman oversaw the division's land use recommendations for a 16-county area of southwest Colorado. Sherman was on the interviewing panel that selected John Muma as division chief. He retired early in 1999 and is not shy to blame the Owens administration.
Mr. Walcher, since he has come on, has put a, I guess you may as well call it a censorship on any type of news release by any Division of Wildlife employee. Division employees are required to submit any type of news release through him for his review prior to any publication. So basically, a public statement like I'm making now as a retired Division of Wildlife employee could not be done without Mr. Walcher's approval. And I think that's very sad. And it's definitely is disturbing to the division people. There's a lot of controversy about it within the division. I think it's certainly hurt morale. Division wildlife people are very independent people. They're in the wildlife field because they're dedicated to the resource, and they're going to speak for the resource. And we're not always the best politicians because we don't see things necessarily from the economic development standpoint. We see it from a wildlife first. So Division of Wildlife people are very tunnel vision. They speak from the heart for wildlife, and when you have a DNR director who's saying you're not going to do that if it's going to impact development or it's going to be controversial or political, you can't make that statement, I'm going to censor it all. I think that's sad, and that's currently what is happening.
Sherman says the division is now run by the man who used to run the Chamber of Commerce for Western Colorado, and that had a major impact on his decision to retire early.
A lot of the Division of Wildlife employees were very, very frustrated in the fact I couldn't go out and do my job. And, you know, I spent 30 years at not making much of a salary to protect the resource. And there are a lot of good people out there that are supporting wildlife, and they're expecting us to do our jobs, and they're critical when we don't do our jobs because we can't politically do that.
When MUMA's censored comments were posted on the web, Sherman says it was clear that Greg Walter was yielding to oil and gas, timber, ski development, and off-road vehicles.
And you make some hard decisions, and they are. They're very difficult decisions when you're talking about land that's worth millions of dollars, but comes a point in time where if you don't have that open space, you don't have some quality of life, what good is it? I mean, we may as all be living in Chicago or Los Angeles or New York, and I think the reason most of us live here is we have this beautiful state, and we do have some open space, but unfortunately the greed and the money is taking over, and everybody thinks there's another side of the mountain, and so we're not using those land use tools.
Sherman says the politicizing of state agencies is hastening what will be an exodus of the Division of Wildlife's top 40%.
I retired 5 years early just because it was just too frustrating working with the system. And a lot of people in the division feel that way.
Walking between the lions and the squares, be careful that you don't step on the bears. There are bears on the stairs, often dares, and they're very hard to get along with.
As far as the face on the dartboard, Greg Walter has stuck to his guns, maintaining that the MUMA alternatives would bring dire consequences and major problems to the state's economy. Walter's leaked October memo directed all DOW biologists to in the future send all comments to him for editing. Walter maintains that what he's doing is nothing new to the division and that he has no new legislative authority.
There isn't any new arrangement between the department and the division. The legislature did pass a bill that changed the status of the Division of Wildlife from what's called Type 1 to what's called Type 2, and it has an effect on the administrative relationships in areas like personnel and budget and planning and publications and some other statutory functions that are purely administrative in nature. It does not change anything related to policy setting, which is the sole purview of the Independent Wildlife Commission.
But Walter does confirm the division faces a brain drain and an exodus of its most experienced employees.
Maybe the biggest single issue that we face in the Department of Natural Resources. And I know that the problem is similar in the U.S. Forest Service. I was talking to Bob Storch about it earlier today, in fact. We see in the next 5 years basically a third of all the employees in the Department of Natural Resources eligible for retirement, and a percentage that holds about that same level in the Division of Wildlife. So, yeah, we're talking just in this department about 350 people in the next 5 years.
Greg Walter presided over Club 20 during a time when it was able to shed some of its biz booster image. During the 90s, Club 20 supported a lot of business and development issues that were also consumer issues. Walter worked especially on West Slope airline service and funding for highways. Club 20 even endorsed the concept of ecosystem management and proclaimed that the Trans Mountain water diversions should be resisted. Now in his powerful new post, Walter will define the environmental positions of the Owens administration.
One of the things that we're trying very hard to do is to focus the acquisition authorities of the Division of Wildlife and focus some of our attention on conservation easements and leases and other ways to make the money go further. The reality is you can't save all of the wildlife habitat and all of the open space in Colorado by buying it all. There isn't that much money in the U.S. Treasury, and so we've got to be more creative, working closely with some of our partners in the nonprofit world, like the Nature Conservancy and the Conservation Fund and the Trust for Public Lands and others like that, and primarily with local governments, too.
The animals, let's talk dirty to the animals of yours. Mr. Hippo, piss off, Mr. Fox.
Muma spent 30 years in the Forest Service before he took his Colorado job. Since the days when Muma took on the timber barons of the Northern Rockies, the Forest Service, at least in Washington, D.C., has begun to embrace stronger stands on preservation. Muma says that current thinking was consistent with his comment on the White River Plan.
What you see with more of a watershed focus is largely attributable to the current chief of the Forest Service, and that's Mike Dombeck. And Mike is a Ph.D. in fisheries and has taken the view that rather than segmenting out different parcels of ground or administrative units, that the logical planning unit is more watershed focused. So I think you see that a bit more in the more recent plans. And of course the White River is one of the first plans that has been revised after that emphasis came on board with the chief a couple of years ago.
Muma says Greg Walcher's muzzling of DOW biologists is a violation of the public trust.
The encouragement that I give our folks, and I would hope would continue in the future, is you tell me what the impacts are professionally from a wildlife standpoint and make your best shot. If it's in front of a county commission, and if you let them know that if they build a subdevelopment in this deer winter range, here's the consequences of it.
And Muma doesn't fear federal efforts to enforce the Endangered Species Act.
It's there, and it's there to say, hey, if for whatever reasons, politically or whatever else, a state is not capable of assuring viability of populations, then it's the federal government's role to step in and say, okay, we'll take that responsibility away from you until we can collectively move to bring those populations back up.
On the White River Forest Plan, Muma cited major concern with dramatic increases in ORV use. He recommended specific road closures, saying they would improve habitat and hunting. Muma advised reductions in aspen cuts and discourage new gondola and ski crossings on the I-70 corridor. He also supported the moratorium on expansion of ski area permit boundaries. Ski areas in the White River have developed less than half of the terrain in their current boundaries.
There is no vast unclaimed wilderness that they can retreat to. We've met the Pacific Ocean and we've met the state boundaries in Colorado, and there is no more. It's now it's reducing. So do we leave the remaining best habitat and do something with the marginal, or do we just keep chipping away at the remaining best? And that's the real problem right there that's got to be addressed.
Muma expresses hope that the division will bring some bright new talent to its ranks, but the agency will never be the same.
And the turnover up to this point in time has not been real high, because there was, 30, 35 years ago, there was quite a number of new employees brought on over about a three-year period. There was, probably in the neighborhood of 100-plus employees that were brought on in Colorado over about a three-year window. And those people now are either eligible or approaching retirement very quick. So that, my sense is that we've already had some of that occurring. We're going to continue to see that happen.
Muma gets an amen from wilderness activists like Sloan Shoemaker.
The flippant, ill-informed pro-development attitude is, there's lots of land out there. They can just go somewhere else. Well, wildlife biologists will tell you there's increasingly nowhere else to go, and that what is left is getting nibbled around the edges, and eventually there's not going to be enough of it to sustain viable populations of the species that are more sensitive to our disturbances. We're fighting over the last pieces of the wild pie, and if we don't protect it now, it's gone for good.
Greg Walcher admits that even the Republican administration's more modest goals will be difficult to achieve.
The demands on the division are huge and are increasing all the time that the public places there. We expect not only that the division will figure out how to rebuild the deer herds in Colorado and solve the chronic wasting disease problem that affects deer, but also the whirling disease problem that affects trout. We expect them to do hugely more work in recovering endangered species all over the state and in producing more watchable wildlife programs and wildlife education programs. The demands are just unending,
And at the same time, we have, for the first time in a generation, a falling revenue stream.
Meanwhile, estranged biologists such as Rick Sherman are being sought as new consultants by environmental groups.
Just inch by inch, all these pieces of the puzzle are tied in together. The cumulative impacts can really be devastating to open space and wildlife. And most people, they don't look at it in the broad perspective. They look at it in narrow perspective of, well, this subdivision, it's only 500 acres. It's not a big deal because we have millions of acres. But when you have 400 or 500 land use activities occurring in the same area at the same time, it really has a major impact on your watershed.
And we leave the last word to John Muma.
Whether it's a, you know, a road, whether it's a reservoir, it's always, well, those wild animals, I see them over there, and they'll just go over the hill. And, you know, a person that's grown up essentially in this state and gone out of the state and come back and whatnot, it's been a real eye-opener to me the last few years to just see and try to comprehend how much of this state is changing. And it's fairly scary to me, and it's scary because I see places where I used to go and hunt or fish or just go and enjoy a wildlife that were in a certain setting, and I go back now and there's a golf course. And not only is there a golf course, there's a convention center. And not only is there a convention center, there's this whole infrastructure of restaurants, of condominiums, of second homes, you know, parking areas, and maybe a ski area thrown in, and now a new highway and more highways. As I travel around the state, and I do that a lot, and I fly a fair bit, Colorado is undergoing such radical change right now that we really do need to have this, for lack of a better term, smart growth. Otherwise, we're headed down a path that a lot of the amenities that are so attractive to Colorado, and that includes wildlife, it includes the scenic qualities we have, and the good clean watersheds. That one of the reasons I'm choosing to retire is to spend more time with my grandkids and try to instill a conservation ethic in them and help develop that. And they're going to be number one on my priority. I don't plan right now to get into the consulting business, but if people ask me about my opinion, I've never been very timid.
For Thin Air, this is John Kovash reporting. Thanks once again for listening. Thin Air is a project of the High Country Community Radio Coalition.
Funding comes from your station and from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.